Good evening. For WBAI News in New York, I'm Linda Perry with some of the news for Tuesday, March 21st, 2017. Daniel Pantaleo, the NYPD officer who put Eric Garner in that deadly chokehold, had 14 allegations against him and 7 disciplinary complaints. This is according to documents obtained by Think Progress. 4 of those allegations were substantiated by the Independent Review Board, the CCRB, the Civilian Complaint Review Board. Pantaleo, who still works for the NYPD, according to the documents, had a history of breaking the rules. These records are the subject of an ongoing lawsuit. The Legal Aid Society is arguing records should be made public on whether New York police officers have been disciplined. New York City lawyers say a state privacy law shields certain police records from public disclosure. But until last year, the records were accessible to the media. NYPD lawyers stopped the release. They cited the need for stricter compliance with privacy law. A court hearing on the Legal Aid Society argument was held today. A judge decides this at a later date. Legal Aid wants 5 years of police personnel orders to be made public. It says Mayor de Blasio, who says he wants more police transparency, could release information regardless of court rules. And today is a day of action on immigration for more than 60 cities throughout the nation, including New York City. At Tweed Courthouse this afternoon downtown, Mayor Bill de Blasio and other city officials said new protocols are being put in place in New York City schools to protect and reassure parents and students that the city is protecting immigrant rights. Bill de Blasio.
We are instructing all school employees to understand what to do in any situation in which ICE agents appear at a school. We think it's crucial that all school personnel understand exactly how to respond to situations like this. And we're going to make sure that parents know how school personnel will handle it so parents will know their rights are being protected.
The protocol the city is sharing with schools explains how to appropriately and safely respond to requests from federal law enforcement officers. The updated protocol directs schools to collect detailed information from federal agents, including the nature of their request and any paperwork or warrants, and it instructs the officers to wait outside the school building while staff members consult with Department of Education attorneys. Officers will not be provided information or be allowed to enter schools unless absolutely required by law.
If ICE agents come to a school, they will be kept outside the building while the school staff assess the situation, get NYPD assistance, and consult with appropriate city legal authorities. Schools will not share information with ICE agents unless required by the law. So this is a very clear point I want to make up front. Again, parents are in such a fearful point at this point. They're so concerned about ICE agents appearing out of nowhere and disrupting their lives and their families and potentially tearing their families apart. Our message is that our schools are a place of safety, and our school safety agents will in fact apply these rules and ensure that no ICE agents come into our school building unless they are authorized by senior security officials and have appropriate documentation. The Department of Education does not, as you know, does not track the immigration status of our students. We are explicit about this point. So one of the important things we do to keep the bond between our schools and all the parents and family members of our city is we do not ask documentation status. It parallels the policy NYPD has had for decades of not asking documentation status so that we don't put parents and other family members in a position of feeling like their lives could be compromised. The city will be very clear with parents about the standards we will hold for our school buildings, and further, we will facilitate through a number of means, workshops and other opportunities for parents to get all their questions answered about their rights in general at this moment.
Bill de Blasio says what he's seeing has never been seen before.
Combination, the travel ban, which we've never seen something like that before, where people were detained without any charge in the original travel ban. We have never seen an executive order that I know of threatening Homeland Security funding. We haven't seen an individual who the federal government attempted to deport in while they're in the middle of medical treatment in this country. There's a whole host of things I certainly have never seen before, and I think when you add them together have created an atmosphere of particular fear and a sense that anything could happen, which is why we need these precautions in place.
Schools Chancellor Carmen Farina also reassures parents. Nisha Argwal is the commissioner of the Mayor's Office of Immigrant Affairs.
I too am the daughter of immigrants and care about this issue deeply. And in New York City, where nearly 40% of the population are immigrants, when you add their children, that's 60% of the city. And every day, as the Commissioner of Immigrant Affairs, I talk to immigrant families. And this is a moment of great uncertainty for immigrants. That's why it is vital that the city deliver clear information to students, parents, and the broader community. We want young New Yorkers engaged and safe in their learning environments. And that is the reason why, in addition to the guidance that was announced, the city will be launching Know Your Rights workshops to ensure every New Yorker is educated and connected to the help they need. With the help of our partners, we will be offering over 100 workshops covering every borough. I want to thank the DOE, in particular community schools and international high schools, as well as Fordham Law and the Catholic Charities Community Services for helping to deliver these workshops. And all of these partners, as well as other trusted legal partners, will be ensuring that New Yorkers get the information they need in this uncertain time. These initiatives are led by our Action NYC Legal Services Program. And in the last year alone, the mayor's office has presented at nearly 2,000 community events, including Know Your Rights forums in all five boroughs. This work will now continue in collaboration with our schools. And we will continue to build on this work until we reach all of the New Yorkers in every corner of the city who need this information. Our message to our immigrant brothers and sisters is we see you, we are with you, and we stand with you.
The U.S. Conference of Mayors Cities Day of Immigrant Action is a coordinated effort in cities across the country to show support for immigrants and drive forward sensible immigration reform. New York City Council Speaker Melissa Mark Vivedito.
We're obviously living under a political climate where fear, uncertainty, and hate is plaguing our communities. Every day we wake up to news of families, law-abiding families, that are being ripped apart and separated from their loved ones. Actually, from here, I'm going to a rally at 26 Federal Plaza of a 32 BJ member's husband. She, being a U.S. citizen, married to an undocumented individual, had a check-in today, was picked up, have a 12-month-old son, and is being detained. This is happening too often. And contrary to what they want you to believe, immigrants are the economic engine of our city, of our country, the backbone of our neighborhoods, and what makes this nation unique. So this is why the City Council, working with this administration, is doing everything in its power to protect and defend our city's immigrants, and why I'm proud to have worked with the mayor and Chancellor Farina on today's new guidance for principals on how to address immigration and other law enforcement that would want to enter our schools. The guidance is vital for students and their families as it takes the guesswork out of interactions with ICE and other law enforcement in our schools.
New York City families have access to Action NYC. It's a free, safe immigration legal services program. Legal services are provided to New Yorkers regardless of immigration status in their language of preference at select community-based organizations, health and hospital facilities, and also in schools. In other news, as the more inclusive St. Patrick's Day parade was winding down on Fifth Avenue with immigrants showing off their Irish pride, there was a different show of strength which took place at Rockefeller Center, a protest against Trump's travel ban. Ikam Killick shares some of the voices at the protest.
Up to the sky! Up to the sky! No fans! My name is Arturo. I am a teacher, a high school teacher. I live in New York, but I am originally from Mexico City. It's very important for everybody to resist the racist policies of this government, and we need to show that this land is welcoming to all immigrants. It's a land of immigrants. We are all immigrants. Everybody's an immigrant here, almost, except for Native Americans, so we need to welcome everybody. We want to build conscience so everybody who sees that in the press and in the media realizes that there's something wrong going on, and hopefully we'll build more and more support to repeal these racist policies.
My name is Faiza Ali. I'm a local community organizer and activist. I've worked in the Muslim community for over a decade just on issues of civil rights and human rights. I'm not here with any particular organization, but I'm one of the organizers of today's No Ban Human Banner event. There have been a number of protests in response to the president's executive orders impacting the Arab community and the Muslim community. This idea was really drawn up by a few different activists. We were sitting around. This was after the International Women's Day event, and we knew that the second executive order was going to actually go into effect on March 16th. We wanted to make sure that we had a response. You know, we've seen a number of people come out into the street to have their voices heard. We wanted to create another entry point for artists, for people who have creativity. We wanted to show that it's going to take all kinds of protests to actually send a powerful message that no ban is going to keep us from building the resistance. The ban currently impacts six different Muslim-majority countries. I am not Arab, but I have friends in the Arab community. I have, family that is impacted at the border, that was impacted by the first ban. I think this was an important moment for us to gather New Yorkers, not just from the impacted, countries, but people of conscience, people who know that this is an un-American. This ban goes against our values of what we believe in as human beings. It was important for us to gather and show that message. But we expect that for the next 4 years that we're going to have people out in the streets and resisting every single step of the way. Any attempt at turning us back, any attempt at doing away with the values of dignity and respect that we all deserve, it's going to be met with a groundswell of resistance. And so we expect that people are going to be out in the streets for as long as it takes.
In other news, there's a new version of the Declaration of Independence. It's called Declaration 17, and it takes aim at the Trump administration. Grace Price reports.
Iconic former New York Civil Liberties Union director and notorious First Amendment henchman Norman Siegel, you know, the guy who has defended pointy-hatted Klansmen, prostitutes, and pugilists, but never pundits, the dawn of free speech, known for famously quipping, quote, "Everyone has the right to be repugnant," has finally found someone too repugnant to be defensible, President Trump. Siegel is now asking Americans to re-up their commitment to the founding principles of our nation. He's drafted Declaration 17 that declares resistance from Trump's vision of the nation that this newly assembled group led by Siegel thought leaders, but no politicians, believes is out of sync with the U.S. Constitution. He says Declaration 17 was drafted so that individuals could declare independence from President Trump and his administration.
America stands for freedom, equality, justice, and fairness for all. I believe we now, as of January 20, 2017, we face a clear and present danger due to certain policies and practices of President Trump and his administration that are antithetical to the natural and constitutional rights of people. I, with the help of others, drafted Declaration 17 so that individuals could publicly declare their independence in certain policies and practices of President Trump and his administration. Our motivation was that we felt it was incumbent upon us individually to publicly speak out and take action to oppose, challenge, and when necessary and appropriate, resist certain policies and practices of President Trump and his administration.
Among grievances listed in Declaration 17, the Declaration of Independence from President Trump, are his executive orders. The one called Enhancing Public Safety in the Interior of the United States, which targets sanctuary cities, and Border Security and Immigration Enforcement Improvements to build the wall between the U.S. and Mexico. And then there's Trump's announcement that he would totally destroy the Johnson Amendment so tax-exempt churches could lobby and endorse or oppose political candidates. These are some of Trump's policy that Declaration 17 opposes. You can learn more and sign Declaration 17 at Declaration17.com. Siegel says, just as we have done in the past, once again, we will prevail. Grace Price, WBAI News, New York.
And you're listening to the news on listener-sponsored non-commercial Pacifica Radio, WBAI, in New York. The Reverend William Barber, founder of Moral Mondays from North Carolina, took part in this week's MoveOn.org resistance call. He spoke of deconstruction by the Trump administration as part of a history to deconstruct the progressive legacy. Actions, he says, which are rooted in fear, in racism, and in classism. The Reverend Barber says the Trump administration's deconstruction is not an anomaly. It has happened before, that progressive communities may have some differences but can't afford to be divided. Reverend Barber.
We are in the battle for the third reconstruction of America, and the extremists are scared. That's why they're doing this. They're trying to do this now before the coming diversity so changes the political landscape that extremists will not have a majority and will hardly be able to get elected, even in the South and in the Rust Belt. They see a future coming that they cannot stop. They can only delay. And so there's some things I want to suggest we have to do in this moment. First, we have to critique these issues like health care and repealing health care with moral language. We cannot allow this to just be a left versus right conversation. In fact, I encourage progressives to stop using the language right, because it's bad to call people right and then turn around and try to convince people they're wrong. We can't just use the language Republican versus Democrat. We must challenge these legislations as being wrong, immoral, in violation with our deepest constitutional values, in violation with our economic justice values, and in violation of our deepest religious values. In fact, just one scripture that Christian Jews and Muslims lift up and honor says in Isaiah chapter 10, "Woe unto those who legislate evil and rob the poor of their right and make women and children their prey." Some legislation is literally immoral. It is literally evil. It is violent public policy. And we must use moral language to critique, just like when Kennedy and Johnson used moral language to call for the Civil Rights Act and the War on Poverty and the Voting Rights Act. And then that moral language allowed other people to come together, even though they may have been from different parties. Also, we must call out these congresspersons who claim to be Christian or people of faith who support this regressive legislation, particularly in health care and suppression of the votes and other legislation. We must call them out, challenge them on moral terms, and we must call out the silence of so-called white evangelicalism that seems to be so loud when it comes to attacking our LGBT brothers and sisters, attacking women who right to their own health, and attacking schools when they don't allow certain kind of religious prayer in school. But they're so silent on the fundamental, the most preeminent issues of faith and religion and scriptures, which is how we take care of the least of these. And next, we must call on progressives to fill the galleries of the Congress with persons who will be hurt by this plan. We cannot let them merely pass this legislation without the galleries being filled and the halls being filled by people who will be hurt by this plan or may die. And we must use every tool available to put a face on that.
The Reverend William Barber of Moral Mondays and Repairer of the Breach. It works to build a progressive agenda rooted in a moral framework to counter the ultra-conservative constructs that try to take over the public square. We'll have more from Reverend Barber in coming days. And this is the news on WBAI in New York. Today was day two of the Senate Judiciary hearing into Neil Gorsuch's nomination to the Supreme Court, where he was questioned by senators. Rhode Island Senator Sheldon Whitehouse tried to get at the separation of powers in his questioning, and then he went to the topic of dark money. He asks Judge Gorsuch what he knows about the campaign being run to support his confirmation, a group planning to spend $10 million on TV ads. He asks if Gorsuch knows who's spending the money. Gorsuch says he does not. Whitehouse wants to know if Gorsuch thinks it should matter to the public, if the public should know who is contributing. Gorsuch brings up that disclosure has been used to silence people, that there are interests in First Amendment disclosure that are competing. Senator Whitehouse probes further.
If a question were to come up regarding recusal on the court, how would we know that the partiality question in a recusal matter had been adequately addressed if we did not know who was spending all of this money to get you confirmed? Hypothetically, it could be one individual. Hypothetically, it could be your friend, Mr. Anschutz. We don't know because it's dark money. But if you were to ever find that out, or even if you were to have suspicions, I think in any challenge as to whether recusal was appropriate or not, were that to happen, say, in a lower court, these would be facts that would be noteworthy and that we'd be entitled to have an answer to. So it's kind of odd to be sitting here in a United States Supreme Court nomination hearing with a $10 million spend taking place for you out there in the political world and absolutely no idea who's behind it. Is that any cause of concern to you?
Senator, I'm not sure what the question for me is.
Is it any cause of concern to you that your nomination is the focus of a $10 million political spending effort and we don't know who's behind it?
Senator, there's a lot about the confirmation process today that I regret. A lot.
Yeah?
A lot. When Byron White sat here, it was 90 minutes. He was through this body in 2 weeks, and he smoked cigarettes while he gave his testimony. There's a great deal about this process I regret. I regret putting my family through this.
But to my question.
Senator, the fact of the matter is, it is what it is. And it's this body that makes the laws. And if you wish to have more disclosure, pass a law and a judge will enforce it, Senator.
There are going to be, that just doesn't do, Judge Gorsuch. There are going to be questions that you will be asked to decide on the United States Supreme Court that are going to be dependent on the values you bring to this. I don't think you can avoid talking about those values here.
Supreme Court nominee Neil Gorsuch being questioned by Rhode Island Senator Sheldon Whitehouse today at the Senate Judiciary Committee hearing at the nation's capital. And that's the WBAI Evening News for Tuesday, March 21st, 2017. The news was produced with Ekim Killick, Grace Price, and Reggie Johnson. Linda Perry, WBAI News, New York.